Don't you put that ring on the phone again to fuss out my wife, you son of a bitch. I'm a woman, I'm not a son of a bitch. When I get up to fucking Independence and I went, which actually called Sugar Creek, fucking Missouri, I'm gonna blow you a little glitch, you bad habit, fucking piece of fucking garbage.
Live from the evolutionary.org basement headquarters. This is evolution.org raw podcast.
We got your host Steve Smee and the Mason, where we come to you straight with our Q&A. No bullshit, just raw, hardcore, uncensored.
We're going to have you on national TV with your head between your legs, cowering like a little pussy that you are.
Hey guys, what's up? Gotta love that intro. Another great episode of Raw coming your way. We have some really cool topics. So let's get into the first one. The first one is a relationship question. And they want to know about, he's saying that he's having communication problems. And he's saying that they can't even communicate anymore without yelling at each other. And when he said that when they first started out, it was, hi, sweetie, it was all nice. And now they can literally not even communicate without yelling. So, you know, we see this a lot with couples. And this is one where, you know, you kind of get used to each other a little too much. So we'll let Matt take it first. He's married, and I'm sure he knows exactly what this guy is talking about. You just get so comfortable with the other person that you kind of talk to them differently. And tell us a little bit about that, Matt. What advice can you give this guy?
Yeah, it's almost too easy. I mean, it's funny, but I can tell you right now, if I wanted to, I could get my wife from, you know, pleasant to yelling at me in probably 5 seconds. So part of being with somebody for a long time, you really get to know them. You get to know all their ins and outs. You get to know all their little quirks. You're with them all the time. So you literally know everything about them. And that also includes knowing how to piss them off. And that's the problem. So when you get into an argument, and this is the reason why little fights blow up into big fights, because you leave the toilet seat up. And instead of her saying, hey, honey, can you put the seat down? I don't want to fall in. No big deal, right? Done and over with. She knows how to piss you off. So she's going to say something to you to get that reaction. And then you're going to go back at her. And that's how these little things turn into big arguments. It sounds like there's a lot more than that going on here, though. If this is turning into you can't even communicate without having an argument, then there's an issue. And you need to figure out what that issue is, or to be brutally honest, the marriage will fail. So there's only a couple things that you absolutely have to have. You have to have loyalty. You have to have trust. You have to have communication. And if one of those is broken, it's not going to be a good ride, and it's probably not going to, you know, last very long. So I think the first thing to do is, before you even try to solve it together, maybe take some time yourself and think about what you're doing. Think about how you're contributing and why you're getting pissed off and yelling at her. And then maybe look at it from her point of view, why she's doing it to you before you even talk to her. But eventually you're going to have to talk to her and say, we can't go on like this. This isn't healthy. And come up with a solution, whatever that may be. Maybe you guys can hammer it out together, and then you can, you know, bang her just crazy for a few nights and you'll be good to go. Maybe that's what you need. Maybe you got to get the aggression out. Or maybe you need to go talk to somebody, like a marriage counselor or somebody. There's nothing wrong with that. That can always help getting that perspective from the outside. But I would say treat it as extremely important, extremely urgent. And if you want to succeed as a couple, then it's something you have to deal with right away.
When did this start happening in your situation, Matt? Was it after marriage? Was it before marriage? Was it years into the marriage, after kids? When did this really take off?
I mean, it kind of, like, it's not a linear thing really for me. So we got married pretty quick. Like, we've been married 12 years, and I'm only 35 years old. So we got married at a young age. We only knew each other for not even 2 years. So it was a little bit different. So we were still, like, everything was really happy, you know, for a while there at the beginning. And then I think it's kind of, it's around that time when you start to have kids, because what happens then, that's when you lose the time where it's just you two. So once you have kids, there's no more couple, you know, when you're at home. That doesn't happen. It's all about, you know, the kids. You have to survive. You have to make them live. You have to do everything for them. And it takes them years to be able to do things on their own. And over those years is when you kind of lose each other. So I think it's really important to get out. Hopefully you can get a babysitter in that situation and get out like once a week, because you need to have that couple time. So for me, I think we went through a bit of that when we had young, like really young kids. Like, my kids are 9 and 10 now, so it's a little different. And I think as you get older too, I bet you this guy, if he didn't say, I bet you he's in like his mid-20s. And it's, for me, I think as you get older, you get to a certain age where you just have no room for drama in your life. You have no time for it. And I think a lot of us men, like most of my friends are the same age as I am. And a lot of us, we kind of get to that point where we pick our battles. And sometimes, you know, it's okay to just let her be right, even though, you know, she may not be right, because it's not worth arguing about something stupid. So you really learn, and I've learned over the years, you know, it's never worth arguing. You're never going to win. There is no winner. You're never going to get anything out of it. So if it's something stupid, you just let it go. If it's something worth arguing about, that's what I'm saying. You have to pick your battles. You know, if it's something serious, you know, if you're arguing about, you know, should we move, or, you know, you got a debt problem, something like that's serious that you need to deal with. But, you know, if it's, oh, you forgot to take the garbage out, well, you know what? Maybe that's not the fight you want to have. You just, yeah, I forgot. And you just move on, you know, things like that.
I just told my girlfriend, I'll just mess with her if she's getting mad at me over something, or she like gets an attitude. I'm like, why are you getting triggered? So, and she cracks up, you know, when I say that right away. So it's kind of like just calling her out, you know? And then, and I think too, women, they like a guy who shuts them down right away. If she starts getting like cocky with you and starts doing stuff like getting an attitude with you, shut her down right away, nicely, politely, diplomatically, but just shut her down. And I think she'll gain respect from you. But if you just let her walk all over you, it's going to get worse and worse. And, but I think when you have kids, I think the leverage goes away. When you're married, you're having kids, you're sharing the house, you're sharing responsibilities, you lose leverage as a man. So when you're single and you're living separate places and you have separate lives, and if a girl gets an attitude with you, you just tell her to fuck off. Be like, you know what? I'm done. I'm going to move on. And she's gonna be like, oh, no, no, don't do that. I'm like, sorry, I'm moving on. But when you're married, you can't do that. So the woman has the leverage on you. So early on, you better make it clear that you should not put up with the attitude. And vice versa, if you're a woman, same thing. If a guy's being an asshole to you from the start, you need to nip that in the bud right away. He's to realize that's not right. So you should, you know, treat each other good. I think everyone listening to this who's in a long-term relationship or a marriage can think back to their first date and just remember how nice and diplomatic you guys were together and polite. You know, you're holding the door for her and all this stuff. And then now it's like, when was the last time you held the door for her? When was the last time, you know, you were nice to each other? And that's just how it is. We're humans. We're very social creatures, and we're very loud creatures. That's why when you have a cat, the cat goes and hides in a closet the whole day. because it wants to get away from all the commotion, because we're very, very loud and obnoxious creatures, you know? So that's how it is. And so it's very important, though, to treat each other with respect, because I see it all the time with married people. I see them disrespect each other. I was in a grocery store the other day, and I saw a couple, very good-looking couple. The guy was, like, carrying their toddler into the store, and the wife was like, oh, get a cart. She's like, get a cart. Get this. Get the wipes. She's, like, ordering them out, bossing around. He's holding the baby and grabbing a cart. He's got one hand on the with the baby, one hand on the cart. She's, like, treating him like a slave. Like, she can't, like, help him out. She can't get the wipe and wipe down the, you know, the cart herself. I mean, she can't, like, do anything. It's just, like, she's treating him like shit. And the funny thing is, like, they're both good-looking people. And then they get married, and they don't appreciate each other because they don't realize that the other person is very, very good-looking. It's, like, a 9 or 10 out of 10. And you don't appreciate the other person. You could easily be with someone who's ugly. And you know what I'm saying? So appreciate the person you're with. Very, very important.
Yeah, just the last thing I'll add to it is I want to make it very clear there's a big distinction between a couple arguing and having communication problems and an abusive relationship. That's completely different. But if this is a one-sided thing, that's a red flag that you need to get out, that it's definitely an abusive relationship. If you're not doing anything wrong, if you're communicating properly and she's yelling and screaming at you all the time and you can't have any communication without her yelling at you, then that's abusive and that's not fair to anybody. So like Steve just said, you know, guy or girl, you shouldn't take that shit regardless of who's given it. And you know, there's a crossroads where you come to it and you decide, am I going to stay and figure it out or am I going to go and life's too short? So it takes a lot of soul searching.
So our Fix My Cycle Bruh segment is an oral only cycle. It involves T-Bowl, D-Bowl, and Proviron, and Aromacin as the AI. And he wants to know how to run this, and he wants some help on the PCT. So first off, oral-only cycles, there's absolutely nothing wrong with oral cycles. Okay, there is. Take it from me. People do this shit all the time. I mean, back in the day when pro-hormones were legal, people would get these pro-hormones and run them 8, 12 weeks straight, you know, and they'd have side effects. Trust me, they have lots of side effects, but they would get gains. They would have great results. And they'd cycle off of them, and then they'd cycle back on, and they would never run injectables. I mean, this, I know people have done this for years. So ultimately, you can still get great gains on orals. Are they most efficient? In my opinion, no. I'd rather inject once or twice a week then have to take a fucking pill twice a day. But hey, that's just me. But in this situation, for whatever reason, some people just don't want to inject. They can't have needles in the house or whatever, so they want to run oral only. Now, I've run the T-Bowl, D-Bowl stack. He's running it at 20, he wants to run it at 20 milligrams every day. And he wants to run the T-Bowl in the morning at 20 milligrams a day. And he wants to run the D-Bowl pre-workout. And then he wants to run Proviron at 25 milligrams at lunch. So it's kind of interesting the way he has us set up. And then he's getting rid of the D-Bowl after week 4 and then just rolling with a T-Bowl for 40 milligrams every day. And then he's running the Aromacin from week 1 to week 8 the whole way. So, and then he's going to run the N2 guard also for the 8 weeks. So this setup is really interesting. The way I would do it is a little different though. I would do the T-Bowl and D-Bowl at, I would do 10 milligrams in the morning of each and then 10 milligrams PM of each. Instead of doing this whole morning pre-workout, you know, kind of mixing them up like that. And then the Proviron is totally fine at 25 milligrams. It's not liver toxic, so it's not going to, like, add liver issues. And then you want to run your N2 Guard at 7 capsules a day. That's going to protect your liver. The Aromacin, I would cut it off around week 5. You don't need to run the Aromacin in the full 8 weeks because you're only running the D-Bowl the first 4 weeks. So this is a really good stack. I like the T-Bowl and D-Bowl stack. I've run this before. And they kind of yin and yang each other because T-Bowl is a dry compound and D-Bowl is a wet compound. So instead of stacking 2 wet compounds or 2 dry compounds, you're stacking one of each. So it's a good yin and yang. They complement each other. Matt, have you run this before? How would you run it? And what would you do for PCT here?
No, I haven't run it. I honestly did see this today. And I also found it very interesting because he's put a lot of thought into how it's laid out. So my initial thought is he said he wants gains, right? He wants to gain size and strength. My initial thought is why not just run test with it? You know, you're going to get much better results. But it really comes down to your expectations. So as long as he understands it's going to be a different type of cycle than if he ran an injectable with it, then that's fine. So let's assume he's cool with that. He knows what, you know, what potential there is with this cycle. Just looking at the actual cycle, I would probably, if it was me, I would probably run them both together for 4 to 6 weeks. I get the idea of cutting the D-ball after 4. He's probably trying to look at minimal estrogen side effects. You know, D-ball is kind of harsh, so keeping that to 4 weeks. So I kind of get where he's coming from. But if it was me, I'd probably continue to run them together for the duration because just the way Steve explained that they yin and yang each other, that's the reason why. So I think to cut off D-ball at 4 and then to go 4 more weeks, to go week 5, 6, 7, and 8 with just T-ball, I don't think you'll probably feel great. You'll basically have all the androgens leaving your body right away because D-ball is such a short half-life. You're not recovering natural test because you're still taking a hormone. It's a very mild anabolic. So I don't think you're going to love the T-ball only at the end. But I'm completely open that I could be wrong. I'm not, you know, giving you guys this answer for, you know, from any experience or real world science. I'm giving it from what makes sense to me if I was going to do it. I think the doses are fine. He's keeping them mild, which I really like. And I shouldn't even say mild. I guess it's mild in comparison to what a lot of guys run. It's actually a moderate dose. It's what people should run. Everything else looks good. Aromacin, perfect. Just exactly what Steve said. Run it while you're running the D-ball, maybe an extra week, just to keep everything in check there. When you drop that, you know, there's really no reason to run it. You just risk, you know, putting your estrogen way too low. I think for PCT, if you're going to be running steroids for, you know, up to 8 weeks, the way he has it, I don't think I'm going to run a mini PCT. I think I'm going to just run a full PCT at that point. I'm going to run the perfect PCT, which is the sticky on evolutionary.org that we've gone over a few times on the podcast. There's the regular version. There's also a simplified version there that kind of just, you know, lays it out step by step for you. That's what I would run. I always rather play it safe. And, you know, D-ball hits you hard. You're going to be shut down right away. Really short half-life. It's not something that builds up in your system over time. It's in and out. So, you know, in that sense, you'll be able to recover a lot quicker. But I think you just be so suppressed for that long of a time. I'm still going to run everything, but I'm going to start, you know, everything right away. You're not waiting for esters to clear or anything else. Steve, would you run the mini PCT or would you run the full if it was you?
You know what? It depends, Matt. The individual person, okay, is going to be different in this situation. If you have a very fragile HPTA and it's going to take you longer to recover. So to avoid that really crash and that hard landing, you want to run the full perfect PCT. But if you have a very healthy HPTA where you can bounce back a lot quicker, then you can possibly get away with a mini PCT. But 8 weeks on is really 10 weeks on in this situation, because it's going to take about 2 weeks for the esters to clear. So you're on 10 weeks. So that is quite a long time. So I would run the perfect PCT here just to be safe. I would not run what the guy wants to run, which is just two SERMs for sure. I would not do that. You could kind of do a smaller PCT, like maybe one SERM, and then you want to take the AC generate. That would be something you could do. So, but you know, 10 weeks on is still a long time. So, if you want to move on to the next topic.
Yeah, you want to do, why don't we do some, let's do the diet question. This one, it's a really general question, but it's a good one. We get this a lot, and we know how, you know, in this lifestyle, we can get really nitpicky with the way that we look at stuff. And sometimes it's good to take a step back. So this is just his question here. It says, "Hi, guys, I'm planning to lose weight, and I heard diets are a double-edged sword. Once you stop, the weight loss comes right back. So eating right is a way better option than dieting, correct?" So I get it. I completely get what he's talking about. I think it's a lot of the confusion is that word diet. We throw it around all the time. And I think for somebody that's been in the fitness, healthy lifestyle for a long time, we don't use the word diet the same way they do it in the mainstream society, the same way they would on TV. I think in that realm, you're talking about what's a diet. Well, it's, you know, an Atkins diet. It's the keto diet. I got to lose weight because I'm obese and I'm gonna have a heart attack diet, that kind of thing. Where I think in more of the fitness realm, diet is just, it's our diet. It's the way we eat every day. This is how I eat every day. It's not, you know, I have this crazy goal because I'm gonna die. So I think it's just a whole different ball game. And I think he's right. He's absolutely right. If you're going to do something, any type of nutrition plan, and it works for you at losing weight, and you go back to what you were doing before, of course the weight's going to come back. Because you're just doing what got you to be overweight in the first place. So it makes complete sense. You know, like, it's so frustrating to talk to people that go through this, the yo-yo dieters. You know, they get on track, they lose weight, they have a bad day on the weekend. Instead of putting it behind them and moving on, they eat like shit again. And then they wonder why they put the 10 pounds back on. It's so frustrating and you feel bad for those people, but it's really in your control to do it. So I think a guy like this is somebody I'd love to work with because their mindset is right. And I think that this is where, for anything to be sustainable long term, this is how you have to think. You have to think that it's about eating the right way. It's not about going on a diet. It's as simple as that. Because if you just make those changes, if you make healthy choices, you know, you're not going to lose 5 pounds in the first week, most likely. Some people will. But over time, you're going to be successful because you're going to lose a pound a week, every week. So in 10 weeks, you're going to be down 10 pounds, where the crash diet person is going to lose 5, gain 5, lose 7, gain 8. They're going to be all over the place. Your body doesn't like that. It likes stability. So I think he's absolutely right. You got to find a way to eat right and not look at it as a diet. Steve, what would you suggest for somebody just starting off like this? Is there a certain, you know, certain diet he should follow? Is there something he should avoid?
So this is what I tell people, because I went through this myself. I would say in my early 20s, I started getting into a career life. I started getting lazy. I started eating whatever I wanted to, going out to restaurants a lot. I go out with my girlfriend at the time every Friday night. We both work all week, and then Friday night, we go to Outback. We have a huge fucking meal. I mean, Outback, they give you the bread. They give you the butter. They give you a Caesar salad. You get a steak. You get an appetizer, the cheese fries. You get a soda. You know, it's just like the calories are just ridiculous. Okay? You're eating so fucking much. So I was eating whatever the fuck I wanted. One day, I was like, fuck. I mean, I gotta change everything. I gotta change the way I approach food. I gotta change my lifestyle. So I went to my fridge and I went to my pantry and I got cardboard boxes and I put everything in those boxes. Then I took them to the food bank, donated them. And I said, you know what? I'm gonna change my entire lifestyle. If it can go in my pantry, it's not gonna be in my house. If it can go in my freezer, it's not gonna go in my house. I'm just gonna eat whole, not processed food, okay? That's going to be my diet. That's going to be my lifestyle from now on. So that's what you have to do. I was at the supermarket today. I was buying paper towels. I don't usually go to a regular supermarket. I usually go to a health food store, okay? But today I went to the regular supermarket, and man, it is disgusting the way people eat. I saw a guy in the express lane buying three big things of soda, fried chicken, ice cream. I mean, the diets of people are so fucking horrendous. And you can literally walk around a regular supermarket and not find anything healthy to eat. It is just awful. And the produce is awful because no one eats produce. No one buys produce from these regular supermarkets. So they don't have good quality produce. So you really have to, that's a big one. Start shopping at a good quality health food store. They have them a lot now, okay? Even if you live out, you know, in the middle America or whatever, they still have health food stores. I used to live out kind of in the country, and no, we didn't have like a big health food store, but we had a little mom and pop health food store, and he would have produce and he'd have organic food and stuff like that. So really, there's no excuse anymore to eating healthy, and you really have to just keep a small amount of food in your house. Keep enough food that's going to last you just a couple days. Don't keep like weeks worth of food in your house, because you're just going to be tempted to go and eat it. You're going to be wanting to eat all the time. You see? So it's very important to do that, especially if you spend a lot of time at home. You're going to binge eat a lot. So that's my advice. It really is a lifestyle. You got to totally change the way you approach food. It's a complete A to Z difference.
Yeah, it's really the most important thing you can do. As far as getting healthy, losing weight, feeling better, looking better, aging better, everything. It all comes down to fixing your diet. So, you know, I hope this guy learned something, and I think he'll be on the right track. For training, we got another question. And this one, there wasn't enough information to give specific advice, but it does open up a conversation. So what he writes is, the title is this overtraining? And he writes, "What's up, guys? I train twice a day for 5 days. I do 2 hours in the morning and 2 more hours at night. Do you think that's considered overtraining?" So, like I said, really generic question. Hard to give specific advice. You don't know what are those training sessions, you know, like what are they composed of? Is he doing weight training, cardio, both? Kind of what is it? So I think it's around the whole idea of overtraining. I'll just give my personal view. Again, like, this isn't a big scientific breakdown of muscle repairing and breaking down and repairing and, you know, over and over. This is just what I think. I don't think anybody out there really overtrains. I mean, unless you're a super high level, competitive, top in the world guy, most of us are going to shut down. You know, you're not going to be able to go hard for 4 hours a day, as hard as you could, you know, would need to go to overtrain yourself. I think training 4 hours a day is ridiculous. I don't think it's necessary at all. I would say if you're training that long, your workouts are extremely inefficient. You could be overtraining, but I highly doubt it. So if I don't have an issue per se with training twice per day, what I would do is I would do your weight training in one session and I would do your cardio in another. Or if you wanted to do, say you were doing a push day. So maybe you do your chest in one workout and then you do your triceps in another workout. You know, you could do it that way. That's fine. I have found, this is just me again, and like an hour is more than enough. Like, I don't even train an hour anymore. I'm around 45 minutes and that's plenty. When I used to do a lot more, I maybe an hour and a half is what a full session would be. I don't think there's any reason to go more than that in a day. So I don't know what he's doing for 4 hours. The other thing, like, if you're going 5 days a week, I don't know if that's five consecutive days, but that obviously is putting, you know, including two full rest days in there. So again, that's going to really help with healing. But I think the overall thing to remember here is your body will tell you if it's overtraining. If you trained your chest yesterday and you're so sore today and tomorrow you're so sore again, you probably don't need to hammer chest again. You can probably let it go for a couple days. You know, if you wake up in the morning, you're dragging ass, like, you know, you can't get, you're just tired, you're really having one of those sluggish days, maybe you're just beat up and you need a day off. Like, it's okay to take a day off of the gym. So you have to learn, you know, to trust how you feel. I don't know, Steve, have you ever trained 4 hours in a day, to be honest?
No, I have not. And frankly, it's completely counterproductive. Nobody trains 4 hours a day, guys. I used to train for half marathons. I used to train with triathletes. These guys did Ironman and shit. They flew out to Hawaii. They had like $4,000 or $5,000 bicycles that they would check in at the airport and ship to Hawaii so they could do the Ironman. So, and I would train with these guys and they would train about an hour 10, an hour 15 minutes a day. That was how much they would train. So don't give me this bullshit that you're training 2 hours a day, twice a day. You're not training for – how can that even be possible? Your workouts must be so fucking slow. You socialize half the time. You're flirting with girls and all this shit. You're not training balls to the wall for 2 hours. There's no such fucking thing. Hockey players, they'll sometimes have back-to-back games, but they don't go full 60 minutes balls to the wall. Defensemen might have a 22 or 23-minute night. Okay, but they're defensemen. They're not the skaters. They're not forwards, you know. And they have intermissions in between as well. So it's 23 minutes split up into three sections. You know what I'm saying? So football players, NFL, they have a football game once a week, and they're on the field. They're not on the field the entire 3 hours, pounding each other. You have the offense, the defense, the special teams. You run a play, you know, you stop. You run a play, you stop. I mean, these guys are on the field for actual action, like maybe 10 or 12 minutes at the most. So, you know, don't give me this shit that you're doing 2 hours. How is that possible? I'm in and out of the gym. This includes stretching in under 50 minutes, okay? Because if you're doing 20 sets per session, okay, for your muscle group that you're working, and each set you're taking 45 seconds to a minute in between sets, unless you're like a power lifter, that's, you might take a minute and a half between sets at most. So if you add that up, 20 sets, which is a lot of volume, okay, it takes you, let's say, at most 2 minutes, okay, to do your set and take a break. So that's 20 sets. That's a 40-minute workout right there. 25 sets, which is crazy volume, is going to be 50 minutes at most. You know, and that's being conservative. So unless you have to wait to use each machine, unless you're like doing like just heavy compound lifts where you're taking minutes between sets, like 3, 4, 5 minutes in between sets, there's no reason for your workouts to be taking that long. It's inefficient. It's counterproductive. You want to get the whole goal of weight training, okay, is to rip up your muscle fibers. And then outside of the gym, you're resting and you're repairing and your body repairs itself and makes the muscle bigger and makes the muscle stronger. That's the point of weight training. The point of weight training is not to just go in there and just pound your muscle into the dirt. That's not efficient weight training. So I don't really understand how it's possible to work out 2 hours twice a day and really get anything out of it. So, I don't really understand it. It doesn't make any sense. And it's just buffoonery. But hey, that's my opinion. If you disagree, go do it. Work out 2 hours twice a day. And, hopefully it works out for you. Let us know how it goes.
Yeah, my guess is that out of that 2 hours, it probably is about 45 minutes of actual training. The rest periods are probably pretty long. There's probably a lot of texting between sets. There's probably a lot of, you know, just walking around doing other shit. That's what I probably, think this is it. But, hey, you never know. So, Steve, I know you got a really good topic next for us.
Yeah, we have some stuff we have to address. We have a guy on the forums. He's pretty new. And he's coming on, and he is really, really excited about the forum, and he's asking a lot of questions. And a lot of guys are giving him a hard time, and, partially rightfully so, but the questions he's asking are things that, we don't really address ever. So I kind of wanted to address some of his noob-type questions. And I'll give you an example. The question... One of the questions he asked, he's like, can you turn fat into muscle if you eat protein? And that actually sounds like a really dumb question, but it's not. Because if you ask most people out there, even personal trainers, they'll tell you that you can turn fat into muscle or you could turn muscle into fat. You know, and there's a lot of buffoonery out there. And we never talk about it. But, like, people out there believe this shit because it's just like anything. You could talk about financial topics and you could talk to people about the stock market, for example, and they have no fucking clue about the stock market. They don't understand about stocks and why stocks go up, why stocks go down. They don't understand about, supply and demand. They don't understand about, what equities are and all this stuff, but people damn well know Britney Spears' latest album, or they know whatever rapper, what song he just put out there, or they know, the show on MTV or whatever. People know about pop culture, but people don't know about shit that actually can help them in life, and this is a really good way to kind of talk about this. This is a really good way to utilize this podcast. So can you turn fat into muscle? The answer is of course not. They're two different things. Fat, you can shrink fat and you can grow fat on inside the body, okay? Body fat, you can make it more or make it less. Same thing with muscle. You can make muscle bigger and you can make muscle smaller. How do you do that? How do you make muscle bigger? Well, what did I say earlier? You weight train, resistance train, break down the muscle, and then repair it, and it grows back bigger and stronger. How do you shrink fat? Well, the way you shrink fat, which everybody wants to do, is by eating less food and forcing your body, taking your body out of fat storage mode. Because the way people eat now and the way this guy is eating, because he's 30% body fat, is incorrect. His body is constantly in storage mode. It wants to store fat. So you want to put your body into fat burning mode instead of fat storage mode. So you do that by eating less food and forcing your body to tap into the fat reserves for energy instead of your body storing fat because it's getting so much excessive food. So what is something else in the thread, Matt, that you noticed that you want to address?
Well, so this is another one. We get this honestly every day, and I don't blame him because he is new. So his thing is, yes, I am 30% body fat. I need to lose weight. What's the problem with running test and trend while I'm doing that? So he's dead set on, yes, I'm going to diet hard for a year. I'm going to do it. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. So why can't I run steroids at 30% body fat if I'm going to follow my goal anyway? Won't they just help me? And that's actually a fantastic question because we get it every day. Everyone says, I want to run my cycle, blah, blah, blah. And then we ask, okay, give us some idea. What do you like? What do you look like? What's your stats? Well, I'm, 25% body fat. And then almost unanimously we'll say, hey, hold off, get the body fat down, everything else. But I get where he's coming from. If his mindset is, I'm locked into my diet, I'm locked into my training, won't steroids just make it better? So the reason why you don't want to do that, there's a whole bunch of reasons why, but the main reason, especially for somebody new at 30% body fat, is your health. It's about your overall health. Steroids are not healthy. It's not healthy for you to run a steroid cycle. It puts strain on your organs, especially your heart. As a man, it's putting strain on your prostate. Your prostate will enlarge. It's not good for you. Tren is extremely harsh on your body. You hear stories all the time of guys, oh, I was pissing brown. You think that's good? That's probably not a good sign. So that's just the first part. The second part is at 30% body fat, you're already going to have a lot more estrogen in your body than, somebody that's, 12 or 15% is going to have. It's just natural. Fat has more, somebody that's fat has a lot more estrogen. When you start using testosterone, you're going to have a shitload of estrogen conversion, which means not only side effects, but more health problems, right? The side effects, some of them lead to health problems, right? So estrogen, when we're talking about health, if your estrogen gets out of control, that can lead to things like high blood pressure. At 30% body fat, your blood pressure is probably already high. Steroids, especially tren, is a notorious one, are terrible on your cholesterol levels. Steve's super lean, guys. If he ran tren right now and went and had blood work, his cholesterol levels aren't going to look very good, even though he probably has really good cholesterol levels right now. So somebody at 30% body fat, cholesterol levels, I'm guessing, are not good. Using steroids are going to send them through the roof. Now you're at risk of heart attack, stroke, things like that, in which you're already at a higher risk because of your weight. Okay. And then on top of that, there's the other side effects that you look at, like gyno. If you're already big, at 30%, you're definitely carrying fat in your chest without a doubt. You don't want to have gyno on top of that, and then you're fighting to get rid of that. So this is just a compounding thing here. But the overarching message is the reason why you don't want to do that is it's all about your health. there's alternatives you can use. You can look at, you know, there's a lot of natural supplements. There's SARMs. There's other things you can use to help out. But for your own sake, use the steroids as a tool of motivation, as something you can work towards. Set it as your goal. Hey, if I get down to that 12% body fat or 15, whatever you set your goal as, that's when I can do it, and work towards it and get to that. Use it as motivation, but don't use it as your tool to get there, because it won't help you the way you think. It's going to probably hinder you as far as eating less, because I know most people that I talk to, when they run steroids, they want to eat more food. And then they focus on getting bigger, getting stronger. It's just, it's what you want to do because of what's happening to your body. It's really hard to think that somebody that needs to lose that much body fat could run steroids and then stick to the plan and just cut. So I don't know if I kind of rambled there, but it's one of those things that I feel really strongly about. You don't want to jeopardize your health. Steroids are not something that are a necessity to any of us. You don't need steroids to do anything. So remember that your health is all you have, and you have control over your health.
So another thing he said, he's like, I'm dropping to a 2000 calorie diet while I'm on steroids. And he's like, I'm going to see a nutritionist Wednesday. Well, first off, a nutritionist is not going to teach you how to eat to basically lose weight. I mean, a nutritionist is just someone with a degree who has some knowledge about nutrition. They're not someone that you go to try to look, because he said that in our thread that he wanted to look like The Rock. The nutritionist is not going to teach you how to look like The Rock. They're not going to put you on a diet for that. They're kind of just going to teach you a cookie cutter layout. So it's not really the solution, believe me. And you want to drop to 2,000 calories while you're on the steroids? Why don't you do that now? Why do you have to wait till you're on the steroids to do that? Do you know the problem with that? And I'll tell you what the problem is, because I see this shit all the time. You're going to take the steroids. You're going to eat good while you're on the steroids. You're going to have some results, because you're going to be motivated because you're spending all this money on steroids and injecting yourself. Then we stop taking the steroids. You're not going to be motivated anymore. You're not going to be motivated to eat only 2,000 calories a day. You're going to go back to eating 4,000 or 5,000 calories a day like you're doing now. And you're just going to gain all your way back and then more on top of it. And you're going to be shut down to boot. And you're going to feel like shit. So, you know, you really have to just chillax, just relax, okay? Take a step back, get over it that you're not going to look like The Rock ever in your life, okay? The only person you're going to look like is yourself, and you can be the best version of yourself that you can, all right? The Rock has top 0.5% genetics, okay? You do not, all right? I don't know what your deal is, but trust me, I assure you, you do not have those types of genetics. You're never going to be a wrestler. You're never going to be a movie star, okay? So just forget it. Why don't you just focus on fixing your lifestyle right now? Focus on getting on a consistent workout program and getting on a consistent diet and start eating the way you're supposed to eat, okay? And then down the line at some point, then you can worry about steroids. Because right now, you're not going to benefit from them. You're going to be very disappointed from your results. So, you know, just, hey, stick around the forum and learn, guys. And you guys listening who are in his situation, you're new to this, come on the forum and ask questions and learn. We'll help you. We'll help you get on a good workout program. We'll help you get on a good diet. That's what you need. That's so fucking important, because steroids are not magic pills. So many guys use steroids in the gym and they look like shit. Look at all these guys on YouTube who use steroids. They all look like, and most of them look like shit. Very little of them actually look good. So that's just how it is. I mean, so, you know, keep the questions coming, but just realize that, you know, you're not going to turn into The Rock just from sticking your ass with some steroids. Trust me.
Yeah, the last thing I'll say on this is we've said it before, but it's a really good simple rule to live by, and it's you didn't get to 30% body fat in a month or a year. You know, it didn't happen that fast. You got to 30% body fat over a long period of time from having a shitty lifestyle and a shitty diet. It's awesome that you realized it, but have it in your head. You didn't gain the weight that fast. You're not going to lose the weight that fast. And that's the hurdle. And that's the main reason why everybody struggles to lose weight. And why when you look outside and you walk around, everybody's fat. Because they want the quick fix. They want it to happen overnight. And it doesn't work that way. There are no magic pills. There's no magic fat loss thing. If there was, everybody would look great. It'd be as simple as doing an injection or taking a pill. Everybody would look awesome. It's not like that. So I've said it over and over. The key is consistency. You have to, you've set your goal now to lose fat. You have to do it and you have to be focused on it every day, every single day until you reach your goal. There's no doing it 5 days a week. This is the example I always use because people fall off on the weekends. You can't do it 5 weekdays and then eat like shit on the weekends. You'll never get anywhere. It's the same reason why Steve just said the guys at the gym use steroids and they don't even look like they work out because they're not consistent. I promise you at 30% body fat, if you focus, if you eat in a deficit of 500 to 700 calories a day and you exercise 4 or 5 days a week and you do that consistently in 6 months, you'll be amazed. You'd be down to 12% body fat in half a year if you did that and you stuck to it. So that's the secret, and there's no way around it. You're not going to lose it overnight. Just remember that.
Evolution.org, Raw, guys. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys next time. Have a good one.